to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had quite the long journey. I'm your host, Ryan. Today, at least, Jocelyn's not feeling too well, but I am joined by two wonderful people, including someone who is very close to Jocelyn. Mr. Joel Duggan's here.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. How's it going?
Not too shabby, my friend.
That's good.
Good Friday night to be talking about video games.
It is. It is not Good Friday, but it is a Good Friday. We're also joined by James. I already screwed up the video 5 minutes in. No, it's fine. James, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you guys?
I think we're all good. We covered that. We're all good? Good?
Yeah.
All right, good.
Everybody's kosher.
I just have to remember not to use Windows 7 overlay thingamajigger. So on the Gamers Inn, as you all know, we talk about video games, and we're not going to change that up. No sirree, Bob. I'm going to start with Joel here, because he's got a robot game. Actually, we all have robot games. What's Hawken like, Joel? You want to tell me about Hawken?
Hawken is fun. I first heard about it via, I believe, Scott Johnson a long time ago, and I signed up for the beta because I was looking for a MechWarrior game, you know, and I wanted that kind of, you know, augment your machine, go in and blow up the other guy sort of experience. So I found out about, you know, MechWarrior Online and Hawken and a bunch of other things, and Hawken really pulled me in because it's got that mix of MechWarrior, you know, style gameplay, but it's also got a lot of like classic first person shooter, little Call of Duty kind of in there. And so far it's been fun. I've kind of hit the reset button on it because they recently took the game from being a standalone beta to a Steam, I guess, beta. Mm-hmm. And in that process, you had to uninstall from your computer and then reinstall via Steam. Now you get the benefit of all the, you know, being there with your friends, and it's easy to find out who else is playing and all this kind of stuff. So it makes it a much more social game. But the problem is that I feel like I lost all of my mech stuff. So I think I had a couple of extra guns, and I know I had at least more than one mech to choose from. So I'm back to kind of square one, which kind of had my heart sink a little bit, because I had played it not a lot, but I had sunk a few hours in, you know, over the first 2 weekends that I had it. And I really like it. It's the classic kind of, at the moment, I mean, it's free to play for me because I'm in the beta. But even if they charge for it, you know, I feel like they're going to have a really kind of nice system of, like, you know, you can pay some money and buy a new mech. You can just play your heart out and build up the credits to buy a new mech. You don't have to wait that long, you know, while you're, you know, frustrated with your, you know, standard, you know, box with legs kind of that you get when you first start the game. You can buy new guns. You can change the guns as per your style of play if you prefer close range type stuff versus long range, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You can add movement speed, all these different things that, you know, comes with a MechWarrior style game. But the thing that has struck me the most about it is it handles like a first person shooter. So you're not walking around in a really slow tank.
Oh, good, because so I was going to ask, like,
quick.
MechWarrior, a friend of mine plays it, and he's really into it, and it's a similar setup where it's free to play, you buy mechs, you earn points and experience, but it's kind of slow. It's like, for those on the video, you'll know what I'm doing. For those on the audio, like, please stop. But Hawken, like you said, is a quicker first-person shooter. So that is already got the check mark for me. Now,
yeah,
I remember when Scott was talking about it, he was confused that it was $30 on Steam because it is free to play. But the difference is it's only early access on Steam, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm looking at the Steam page right now, and it looks like, yeah, they've only brought it over onto Steam as an early access. And so if you're already in the game, you can still play it. But I think they're going to be like figuring out how the kinks work between Steam integration, so going and joining new friends, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how I got rolled in, is that I was, because I was in the beta already, they just kind of gave us early access, which is cool.
Right. So they didn't have like a tool to bring your mechs over at all? Like,
no, they just basically said, here are the instructions in the email, and I followed them to the letter, and that was it. And it said syncing with my account, you know, when I joined into Steam, it said, hey, you know, this is your password, you know, because you've got an account on, I think it's Hawken.com or PlayHawken.com is the main website for the game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where it gave you that promise of like, oh, it's syncing with my account. Great. It's going to remember everything. And it didn't really. It probably would have remembered any purchases if I had made any. But because I didn't, I had only just amassed points. The other issue is that like I thought I bought more chassis, but I know that I picked up guns. Like I know that I improved mm-hmm. some of my stats,
right.
And I don't remember. I don't seem to have anything else in my inventory. But that's not to say that I didn't sell the stuff I wasn't using. Like I don't really recall. So I don't want to come down too hard on that. But mm-hmm. I do feel really kind of entry level. So I feel like there was some sort of reset that happened. Which and it's not that bad. I mean, like you play 2 or 3 hours and you'll get like 1,800. Space bucks or whatever it is that they use, and that'll allow you to start picking up some stuff. So you don't have to play for a very long time. One of the things that I really like about the gameplay, because it's so fast paced, and because it's a beta and you're still kind of dealing with like a small-ish group of people that are in there, people are working as teams. So when you're doing a team deathmatch, people are not just like running and flying off the handle. There's several different types of mechs, you know, like there's the fast ones that are small. There's the bigger ones that can transform into almost bunkers. There's some sniper ones, and then there's some like missile attack ones and some kind of in between sort of stealthy ones. Mm-hmm. And what you'll see is that one guy will ultimately choose to be the tank, and the people that play smart will hang out with him. Like, so you'll travel as like a threesome or a foursome through the field. And then when you engage the enemy, he drops down into like bunker status, which gives him more power and more armor. And everybody else is kind of hiding behind him or her, I guess. And it's really cool because a lot of times I find with those it's not arena, but I guess like the team deathmatch kind of maps in first-person shooters, it's kind of a free-for-all, even though you're on distinct teams. Everybody's just kind of like going for the most amount of kills, where in this, if you team up, you do dramatically better.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a lot more fun that way, too.
So for those looking to get into this game and have not played before, do you think they try it on the Hawken website and then like put money into it on Steam? Because it's like $30, and I assume you get probably like, you know, an enhanced starter kit, right? Like,
I don't think you can try on the Hawken website
not anymore.
I believe removed it.
No, they
it's
moved,
just
they
Steam
moved it over,
only now.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they moved it over.
See, that's
so if you're
interesting.
Not in the beta, you have to get it through Steam and pay for it now.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay, well, it's funny because there's been a lot of free-to-play games move over to Steam, and not just free-to-play, but also subscription-based MMOs. Like Final Fantasy 14 just made the jump to Steam, and you have to rebuy the game on Steam. You can still access your same account because it's all the same servers, but in order to get your game integrated with Steam, you have to buy it again through the Steam platform, which again is just really weird. I don't know. I saw some people on Twitter literally buying it just so they could track their time in Steam, which I thought was like, that sounds like Ryan to a T, but no. Okay. So that's interesting. So if it's in early access, do we have some like timelines as to when Hawken will be leaving early access, or is it just there until it's done?
I don't know if they have a timeline posted. I'm kind of perusing over their website right now. They've got 8 maps, and there's certainly 2 to 3 different game modes, which is really cool because you don't have to play against one another. You can actually do like an assault mode where you and a bunch of friends team up and then kind of have to defend the tower.
Right.
That's new. That's new with the move to Steam. Like with this move to Steam, they made a bunch of other stuff available. I really feel that $30 for early access is worth it. If you like these kind of games, I wouldn't say that would be too much or too little. Not to mention that I do know from reading about it a few months ago when I first got into it that it's a small dev team. And so your $30 is going towards helping them complete the game. You know, you'd be able to go in there and test. Obviously, you get, you know, access to the forum. So, I mean, if you're loud enough, you could, give them some feedback and help shape the way that the game is going. There's fan site kits, community forums. They have a lot of stuff on their website in terms of, like, if you want to go to the website and not invest any money, you can see lots of videos and screenshots and mm-hmm. artwork. There's even a comic to kind of give you a little bit of a backstory to make it feel like you're into this.
I read the first issue of that, and it was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't anything fantastic, but it was a good little read.
Yeah, I would imagine it'd be a lot of line mileage. I mean, there'd be a lot of a lot of drawing, because I mean, the maps and the mechs themselves, it's not steampunk, but it's very clunky. It's like, well, it's like the first Star Wars trilogy.
I'd say it looks kind of Titanfall, to be honest.
A little bit. Mechs. A little bit. You can see the pistons, you can see the rivets, you can see, you know, where the hatch and the hinges are. It's not like it's all super sleek and spacey. It's all, I mean, mm-hmm. really, and what's, I find it kind of amusing. It's probably, you know, an in-joke at the dev company, is that the mech that you get when you first get in the game, it looks like a washing machine with legs. Like, it's like a front loader washing, it's just a box with legs and arms. That's kind of it. The other ones look much cooler, but it really kind of looks like it could double as a TV. Like, it's got that kind of weird cartoony kind of feel to it. So I feel like, you know, there's a lot of just, not style, but the art direction and the thought that went behind the design of the mechs and the maps that you're in is really high value. So, I mean, if you're thinking about getting in there for $30, like, you get a lot out of it.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's nice to see a game in early access that isn't just like a old, not finished game at all. Mm-hmm. Like,
this is one they actually plan to release sometime soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, it's just farther along that you would, you know, be able to actually do stuff in it. There's a lot. Two of the most popular early access games, Rust and DayZ, wouldn't even consider them to be in a beta state, or maybe even an alpha state, because there's really nothing. I don't know who I was having this conversation with, but it was recently about alpha and beta states. And
I think it was when we were playing Rust last week. Actually.
Might have been. We were playing Rust, and an alpha is considered a game that you can take home, finish, all the features are there.
Yes.
You know, BioWare famously had their they have an alpha for Dragon Age Inquisition that they give to their developers to take home over the Christmas break, and that was considered an alpha because you could play from start to beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's by no means close to release. That game ain't coming out till the fall, but that just goes to show you how long a polishing period can last. Mm-hmm. James.
Yes.
Hey, you know what? It's funny. We kind of started this in such a rush that I don't even remember if I introduced you.
You did.
Good. Don't worry. Thank you. I was like a 50-50 chance. I don't know if I should ask, but I did. You may remember James. He was on the show last with Extra Life. He helped us out with Extra Life. Feels like forever ago, but guys, guess what? Extra Life 2014 is only like
it is
9 months away. So
less than that.
Is it? Don't do that to me. I guess it is. Tomorrow's March.
Yeah.
Did you say six?
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
No. 7 months.
7 months. Oh, God.
So
crazy.
It's the 10th month.
So, keeping with the robot theme, mm-hmm. what games have you been playing?
Well, I finished Metal Gear Revengeance on Wednesday. I finished Metal Gear Revengeance. And it's my first Metal Gear game I've played all the way through. And it's basically, if you imagine playing, like, if you Dragon Ball Z or your Ghost in the Shell, just super crazy Japanese anime, that's what Metal Gear Revengeance is, only you're playing it.
Right. These are made by the Platinum guys, right?
Yes, made by Platinum, who are the guys that made Bayonetta. And it's insane. Like, it's in the first level. I don't know how much Metal Gear have you guys played, if any?
I played through the GameCube remake, which was a remake of 1, and that's about it.
Okay, so you know that there's the big tanks called Metal Gears?
Yeah.
So the Metal Gear Ray.
Metal
in the first
Gear.
Level, you pick one up, and you throw it, and you jump in there, and you cut it in half.
You pretty much sold the game to everybody listening.
Yeah, it's so you're basically a cyborg, and you have a sword, and you, it's so and you have ninja running like you do in Assassin's Creed. When you run, you block bullets and you parry everything and you cut people's... It's so hyper-violent in that you have something called Zandatsu, which is basically hold down the left trigger on your Xbox controller and you can cut stuff into 1,000 slump pieces.
Huh. So, funny story about this one. This is the game that was unveiled at E3 a long time ago.
Yes.
As like a watermelon slicing demo.
Yes.
And that's all they had for the game. And it's like, it's going to be called Metal Gear Revengeance. It's going to be great. All you can do now in the game is slice watermelons. Mm-hmm. But it is like the best watermelon slicing game ever.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Physically, it's really well played.
Good.
Really well made. And when you... So you have your parry system where it's someone will attack you, red flash, then you block. And then so you stun them. And it works kind of in the same way as Dark Souls does, where you have to make sure you're parrying correctly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, in fact, the best way to describe it would be Dark Souls mixed with Bayonetta. With the Bayonetta craziness and Dark Souls in that you have to be precise with your parries.
So, did you enjoy Bayonetta?
I haven't played Bayonetta. I've watched videos of it, and that's what I've been. That's what it's been compared to.
Yeah. I know Platinum's, they're big on their... Twitch action third person games, and they had another one which had a robot guy, which was it just left my head. It was a robot guy. You slid on your knees sometimes. You had jetpacks on every part of
just
your body.
Like Metal Gear Rising, to be honest. Vanquish.
Yeah. It was Vanquish. It's probably just as ridiculous. But I guess we're here to talk about Metal Gear Revengeance. So you beat it. Is it a long game?
I beat it. It took me 8 hours to beat, but that's with getting stuck on some bosses, so I had to fight one 6 or 7 times before I could beat it. And they're hard bosses, so you have to make sure you're parrying correctly or you lose.
Oh.
You can't fail. You have to be doing it correctly.
That seems short to me.
It's a very short game. There's 7 levels.
Oh, wow.
But there's also a bunch of virtual missions, which are like special other levels, and there's 2 DLC packs. It's not a long game in the least. But to sell you on the craziness, in the first level, you're fighting this Metal Gear Ray thing.
Right.
And it jumps about 3 kilometers away and shoots missiles at you. Instead of running away from the missiles, you run on the missiles at the Metal Gear.
It sounds like Game of the Year material to me.
It's fantastic. And the soundtrack is the best video game soundtrack I've heard in years.
Wow. Okay, well, that's a big sell. Now, this game came out in the summer on Xbox and PS3.
And Xbox. Yes.
Now, you were playing the PC version, right? Because you're streaming it. Man, that might be add to wish list, wait for spring sale. Because I think it went on sale in the winter sale before it even came out. So you know it's going to be rock bottom. I don't mean to say that, but you know it'll be on sale at some point.
Is it available on the next gen?
No.
I do not believe so,
No.
Sadly.
It's the next gen, actually, funny enough, speaking of Metal Gear, they just announced that Metal Gear Ground Zeroes or something, which is basically a prologue to Metal Gear 5, is going to be out on Xbox One, PS4, PC, 360, PS3. And I think that's
cool.
In April or maybe May.
I wonder if that means Metal Gear 5 is going to be out on PC as well.
Oh, maybe. I might be mistaken on the PC, but I think that...
Damn it.
I think that Konami or Kojima's studios or whatever he calls his studio was more serious about PC development, but I could be wrong. It might just be console.
There's nothing. I'm googling. It looks like there's nothing specified, but on the Metal Gear Wiki, it says there've been listings for PC developers for it.
All right.
Well, so maybe.
Although a Metal Gear game built for a next-gen system would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We have yet to see, I think, the killer true next-gen title. Titanfall might be it, although mainly just because it's being the next-gen version and the PC version are being developed by a single studio and the 360 version is being shopped out. But I pre-ordered Titanfall, and I'll have it on PC, and I think a few people are actually picking it up on PC, so it'll be interesting to see what that game is like, because people just go nuts about it, and
Well, it's using the Source engine, isn't it? So I don't think, it will be. And I know it's definitely going to run very well.
Mm-hmm. I've never really been able to get into multiplayer games, but when I have three or four friends say to me, like, we're going to play Titanfall, it's going to be great. And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. all right, fine, let's do it. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's probably not going to be as bad as SimCity, but hopefully it lives up.
I mean, EA have had some shoddy launches in the past. This isn't an EA-developed game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean... I don't. And this is anecdotal, but I've been playing Battlefield 4 recently, and that's running fairly well as well.
Oh, good. Well, then they bounce back, because I know Battlefield 4 was having some issues. But Joel is talking to some peeps in the chat room. Apollon, that's how I'm going to pronounce your name, is saying that he was in the beta and didn't care for it.
No, he was talking about he's talking about the beta for Titanfall.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about, Titanfall. Like I was saying, I didn't get a chance to try the beta, but I know a lot of people were just gung ho about the beta.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people aren't giving Titanfall a fair shot. Like a majority of the people who have really played it love it, and then the other people are like, "Oh my god, EA Origin." And I know like Origin's mm-hmm. had its problems, but.
Well, I mean, that's a big hump for me. I mean, I don't play that many games, but I've had a little bit of an experience with Origin, and oh my god, mm-hmm. like it turns me off of mm-hmm. you know, their platforms and their you know, distributed games for sure. I know that I've heard good things about Titanfall. I don't know. My issue is that, you know, like I'm a casual gamer, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so when you get into like Metal Gear and Gears of War and Titanfall and there's Ghost something and there was another one that they showed. Ryan, you played it, I think, recently. It's another Space War one. It was E3 this past year in 2013. They showcased it.
Hmm. It's not Halo, maybe, is it?
No, maybe it's Metal Gear that I'm thinking
of.
Or
Dead Space?
Dead Space, that's it.
All right. Yeah.
They all kind of jam together in my brain mm-hmm. and go, out the other side, like I have a really hard time distinguishing them all.
Yeah.
So it's with so many of them coming out, it feels like all these new games for what I'm seeing, you know, for the new consoles, they're all the same.
You're not wrong, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. You're super right, and I mean, you're especially right when it comes to the Nintendo platform, the Wii mm-hmm. U. I'm noticing that every game that comes out for it, I always try to bring it up on the show, but it's really hard to discuss because it's like the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, it's like the one that came before it, but prettier mm-hmm. and with a couple new features. I've been toying with how I'm going to describe Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which came out a couple weeks ago on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic game, but... it's like Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Wii with some new characters, some prettier backgrounds, and I mean, yeah, it's like, I think Nintendo's having a bigger issue there with their titles because everything that comes out is, and I know this has been an issue for a long time, and I'm not really complaining because I enjoy everything they put out, but it's really hard to get people excited when you just describe something as, it's like this, except it's got a couple extra things. I mean, I totally get where you're coming from, Joel. I mean, you know, they all sort of blend together, especially Call of Duty, Battlefield,
Medal of Honor,
all those war games. They all look the same, and to the untrained eye, it's like you put Call of Duty and Battlefield 4 together, showing one of their generic city, broken city maps. It's like, I don't know which one's which.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And what did I play at your place New Year's Eve, Ryan?
That was Killzone.
Yeah. See, another one that, again, like, I mean, I thought that was the Dead Space one. You know, like,
yeah. Just,
you know, it's funny how they all sort of blend together. It's not like I'm against, you know, the new games. I mean, like, I'm thoroughly enjoying Black Flag, you know, Assassin's Creed.
Oh, man.
You know, and some of these games have a similar aesthetic, although, you know, Mass Effect took a different approach to the gameplay and the story, and that's probably why, you know, I liked Mass Effect so much, but then, you know, when I'm playing Gears of War or these other games, they don't really stay with me, because I just feel like, oh, you're here, and there's stuff to shoot, but you don't really have much of a reason, whereas in Mass Effect and an Assassin's Creed. I mean, granted, Assassin's Creed is not a shooter, but like there's enough of a narrative to at least make it feel like it's not just a boxed shooter.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of the games like Call of Duty and Battlefield are all very instant gratification. Like, you want your action right now, and you get this adrenaline, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. Like, 10-minute matches, and then, like, as you said, Assassin's Creed, you're building up, and you keep going. So I can see that totally.
I think when it comes to next gen, the system you want to look at for not another bro shooter, I hesitate to say that, but not another, you know, war shooter, you know, all look the same, is the PlayStation 4. You've got, not only do you have Infamous Second Son coming out, which is a character action game with nothing really like it, where you play like a superhero with powers. Those games are fantastic. But I think specifically for you, Joel, you should look up The Order 1886.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for PS4. And it's a squad-based shooter similar to Mass Effect / Gears of War, where you play in a neo, I don't know what the term is. Oh, like,
you know, it's alternate universe London.
Right, alternate universe London.
I remember seeing the trailer for this at E3.
Yeah, they recently released another trailer with more expanded gameplay and look at the characters, and it looks like Van Helsing, except with, you know, gas-powered crossbows that auto-fire and stuff. It looks pretty cool, and I haven't seen a lot from Microsoft with their titles that I'd like. What is on the horizon on the Xbox One? I mean, I haven't really been paying attention for two reasons. One, I don't want to go out and buy an Xbox One anytime soon. And two, it's just they haven't really been really vocal. They might be saving most of their surprises for E3. But I hesitate to think of anything.
The only thing I can think of for the 360, honestly, is Titanfall. I haven't heard anything. And then Watch Dogs in a while.
Yeah, they really are focusing on Titanfall. I mean, they announced that Titanfall bundle, and I find it... Microsoft seems to be all right with allowing their hardcore console exclusives to also be available on the PC. And with the next-gen Switch being so fresh, it feels weird to allow people that out. You know, like all my friends that I would play... that shooter with all own great PCs and will be like, well, I'd rather spend 60 than 500, you know? It's like the excuse that people say about Nintendo, release their games on other consoles, you'll make so much money. It's like, well, yeah, but then you're not buying Nintendo's hardware, and that's where they like to make the money, right? Yeah. Everybody likes to their main thing to do well. So I find it weird. I mean, have you been noticing a lot online and stuff that Titanfall is being picked up by PC players rather than Xbox One players?
I haven't seen a lot about where the people are picking up, to be honest. I know that people are buying it, but I haven't been following it. It's just the own... I don't know, to be honest. I know that the Giant Bomb crew have been playing on the 360.
Oh.
Sorry, not the 360, the One.
Okay.
The circles that I've that I travel in, as far as gaming podcasts go, most of the, which is probably a bit of a skewed demographic, because most of those podcasters have pretty heavy gaming rigs, they opt for, you know, the computer by default because they get a better value out of it.
It'll be interesting to see, and March 11th is around the corner, and I'm sure once I've had some time with it, I'll be talking about it, and I'll try to convince everybody to buy it. And hey, we might even get some Titanfall in on Gamers in Game Night, which we usually do Thursdays at 8 p.m. And when I say usually, the last 2 weeks, we've actually made it happen. So we're on a roll. Yesterday, we ended up playing StarCraft II with myself, Jocelyn, Joel, and Underscore Funk, who we all hadn't played together in a year. So
close to it. I remember it was really warm in here the last time we played, so it must have been sometime in the summer.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was rough. I mean, a lot of people were having fun with how noobish we were. Like, I had never used a chrono boost that was added in StarCraft 2, and just goes to show how much Protoss I played. I mean, I chose random, and I think that was the first time I played Protoss, at least in Heart of the Swarm. I think we recorded the whole thing, but the whole thing is available on Twitch if you want to go get an uncut version. We played for about 2 hours. We've been kind of on a Blizzard kick, I think, because Reaper of Souls is coming out soon.
Yeah, when is that? That's next couple of weeks, isn't it?
It's a month, so end of March. I think it's the 25th.
Okay.
There's something to be said, too, for the ease of playing Blizzard games with friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like, if you are getting ready to do a stream and you're like, oh, what game are we going to play? Well, what does everybody have? Well, pretty much everybody has these games, and most people at least have a Blizzard account. So, like, you kind of narrow it down really quickly. And the way that they integrate the system with Battle.net, it just makes it so easy start up the game, log in, get pulled into a group with friends, and start playing in no time.
Yeah, the beauty of the other thing about StarCraft 2 in terms of ease of use is if you have a friend that only has Wings of Liberty, you don't have to quit the client. You just all join, and it brings everybody down to the lowest level. So if we had somebody in the chat room say, oh, I only have Wings of Liberty, and you know, I think we were more inclined to play Heart of the Swarm, but if we wanted to bring them in, we all could have played without any hesitation. We wouldn't even have to stop a stream.
I think Jocelyn would have been like, where's my Widow Mines?
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah, especially when I had like 200 Mutalisks.
Oh, jeez.
There was a lot of spamming.
Which dismantled me. I did not do well against the Mutalisks.
I think part of the problem is all the people that we were playing with didn't attack, scout, rush. I think I rushed a couple times, which completely screwed over Underscore Funk, but it's just a lot. You know what, it's a lot of fun playing against like-minded friends when you just play and you have fun. You don't have to worry about, oh, am I gonna get the guy who's super good, you know, or the guy who just tower rushes me, although that did happen last night.
Yeah, John did a cannon rush.
He did a really good job too, although like it was countered really well. We had a blast, and StarCraft 2 will definitely be on the docket again in the future, because I know I had a lot of fun.
Have you guys made a decision as to what you want to play next week?
No, but I think StarCraft 2 is probably going to take over as the
go-to.
I don't know what we're going to play. Let's play StarCraft, or, you know.
You guys have been having fun with Diablo.
Yeah.
And, I know that you both have huge indie libraries on your Steam accounts. You could always just pull a Jocelyn and just go alphabetically.
Is that what she was doing? It's like, oh, alphabetically. I had an idea. I know, well, actually, speaking of which, I'll throw it to James. James, you've been doing something interesting on your stream at twitch.tv/iagobos, where you've been playing through your backlog, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I beat Metal Gear Rising, because I was in there, and I was playing some Psychonauts, which I don't like at all.
You don't like Psychonauts? Oh, don't let Nicole Spagnolo hear you.
Oh, really?
She loves that game. She will come after you.
I'll go... Well, so, yeah. Maybe this is a good time to talk about that. You know how in, like, Crash... Not Crash Bandicoot, but, like, in Jack and Daxter or in Ratchet and Clank, you have certain sections of the game where it's like, you have to have 600 of these shiny things to go any further.
Right.
I hate that so much.
You hate it?
I hate in Japanese JRPGs when I have to grind up experience.
So I've never played Psychonauts, although it's on my list of I should probably play it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But is it like you have to collect a bunch of stuff to progress?
Yes.
So it's not like all old rare games or even, you know, Donkey Kong, the newest one, where there's just tons of stuff to collect, but you don't have to progress. You just have to get to the end of the level.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's different. Like that. Only
oh, it's different. Okay.
There's a gate where it's you, and so throughout most of the game you don't have to be picking them up. It's like, oh, if you want to buy this special thing, just collect 50 of these things.
Mm.
And you get to one point and it says, hey, you need this power. It costs 800 things. And so it literally took me 3 hours to collect everything.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was just, I used to really like Ratchet and Clank, but I don't remember sticking points like that. I only played the first
game.
Oh, okay. Ratchet and Clank is amazing. All the Ratchet and Clanks are great. They just released one on the PS3. Was just a smaller title. it was like a download only or something, but I'm super... the day they announce a Ratchet & Clank game on the PS4, like, Ratchet & Clank is the closest thing you're going to get to a Nintendo experience on a console that isn't made by Nintendo. That is a very bold statement, but it is probably the truthiest truth you'll hear on the show.
Yeah, they are fun games, and I'm also a little bit biased. I'm a huge fan of Creature Box, which is the team that does the art direction for the games.
Right,
And they are fabulous artists, and they have such a great sense of humor and sense of design and style. And I mean, I remember it must have been the first Ratchet and Clank, maybe the second, but they have a chicken gun.
Yeah, they're
it is what it sounds like.
It's great.
You know, like it shoots a chicken out the front of it. You know, the cartoonist in me is just ecstatic at that kind of gameplay.
And I mean, Psychonauts has a brilliant art style. It's designed by Tim Schafer, who's from Double Fine, and it's really funny, and it looks great for I think it came out in 2004. It's beautiful. The art style's great, but it's I have such an issue getting past that stopping point for the game. Like you have to stop the action, and it's just so hard to get past.
It's also a game, like you mentioned, 2004. I mean, 2004 was a very different time, and
that's true.
That was 10 years ago, and 10 years ago, in the gaming universe, that sort of stuff wasn't unheard of and was sort of the norm, right? Like that was the artificial way of extending a game, you know. And I agree with you. Nowadays, that might feel a little drawn out because. It's a part of game and design that has been condemned, kind of. Like if it's not made fun, then, you know, people poo-poo it, you get bad reviews, and then you never include it in your game doc again, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, there's a part where I'm at now, you have to fight four guys. You have to fight their four luchadors, and you have to fight them to get past. And there's a part, and you have to have a special power to defeat the last one. It doesn't tell you where you get that special power. You have no idea how to do it. So you have to backtrack through the level, collect all this stuff again, go and buy the power from somewhere else. It's just, there's so... I don't know if it's because I'm used to games, air quotes, hand-holding me and telling me where I have to go. But it's just this, I hate having just weird blocks to make the gameplay longer. In fact, that's what it feels like they're doing. They're making it more obscure just to extenuate the gameplay.
So will you finish it?
No.
No. Okay, so you do have a backup rule in your sort of plan that if you don't enjoy a backlog game, you throw it out of the backlog and into the uninstall list.
Do not like list right now.
Well, okay, that's good because I remember achievement seekers would not throw it out. They'd hate it and they'd keep playing it until they beat it and then hated themselves just a little more. Yeah, we've been at talking games for quite a while, so we're going to have to move on. Jocelyn and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. Use the code THEGAMERSIN to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. And today, inspired by our GamersIn Game Night, we're going to be talking about streaming games and how it affects the industry. I was sort of inspired by some of the comments we were getting in chat last night in between the making fun of Ryan for not knowing what Chrono Boost is and making fun of Jocelyn for reacting to the many, many mutilists that were coming after her. There was talk of how people were watching our stream, experiencing StarCraft in a different way, or even for the first time, and some even asking, do I purchase this game? Is it fun? You guys seem to be enjoying it a lot. So I thought Let's Plays have been something of a bit of a much-talked-about topic, and I wanted to know if you guys thought Let's Play actually hurt the game industry in any way. We obviously know that some, you know, as we found out last night, they help a lot by making people want to buy them. But do you think it hurts at all?
I want to say no, that because I feel like you're saying that they're bad for the industry. But okay, but I know that's not what you're asking. I think they can hurt certain games. Like you've got the recent release of Thief, which is supposed to be broken and rubbish to put it frankly. And I feel like that people watching that is going to hurt people buying the game. But I don't feel like... I think that helps the industry as well, because it makes people move away from games that aren't working too well. I can't see it hurting the industry. Only in... Apart from if you're talking about multiplayer games like League of Legends, where you have people stream sniping, where you have people joining those games and ruining fun.
I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah, so back up on that. What is stream sniping?
So you'll have something like... take Borderlands, for example. You can jump into people's games, or Dead Island. You'll have people streaming a game and viewers jumping into that game as well and ruining their fun.
I see. Some of the stuff we've seen in DayZ, where
exactly like in DayZ.
Yeah, where excuse me, where people are in there and they're in there just to cause shit. Now, mind you, it's usually the people streaming that are in there causing shit, because that's pretty much the only fun thing you can do in that game at this point. That's interesting, and I mean, I guess that doesn't hurt the industry at all. That makes people want to go out and buy DayZ, or at least watch more videos and encourage other people to buy DayZ. But I guess, like, the biggest thing I see as Let's Play games hurting the industry is when someone plays through an entire narrative experience, you know?
So, like Last of Us, for example?
I wouldn't even say The Last of Us, because, again, like, there's gameplay there that where you're like,
okay,
I want to experience that gameplay. No, seeing so how it works and some of the story... For some people might be like, that's enough. I've experienced The Last of Us. I can move on now. But
okay.
I'm very gameplay oriented for me. So like when I see someone playing a game, I'm like, I kind of want to just try that. I'm thinking more along the lines of like Gone Home. Like if someone were to stream the entirety of Gone Home, does that obviously affect sales positively, but also you're going to find people that are just like, well, I'm not going to buy it. I'm just going to go watch a 5-hour YouTube series, you know?
Yeah, and I think you're talking about two extreme, you know, ends of the spectrum. You know, like, so you've got something like Gone Home, and that has got a, you know, for a game that, any game that has a heavy spoiler involved, I feel like streaming the whole thing could hurt it. Streaming Act 1 could benefit it. You know, I think also the timing of these streams is important to remember, too. Like, I know that one of the games that I've been keeping a close eye on has been WildStar. And there's been a lot of streams of WildStar now that several journalists and people with fan sites have had the level 1 to 15 NDA lifted. And they can stream that kind of content. And I've watched some because I'm curious to see what it looks like. You know, I'm curious to see, you know, what the world looks like, the art direction, how the gameplay is, you know, like, is it as fast-paced as everybody seems to say it is? Because it's one thing to watch a dev video from Carbine, but it's another thing to watch a player that is either new to or, you know, a honed MMO player experiencing the game. But I also don't want to watch someone level from 1 to 15, because eventually I would like the level from 1 to 15, you know? So I feel like there's a delicate balance between using the user experience and the community of Twitch and game streaming to your advantage, but there's a cutoff point, I think.
Yeah,
I think it depends on how you look at streaming as well. Because, I mean, when I stream, I think of it as I'd be sitting on my couch talking about this game with other people. And I can see doing that with something like Gone Home. It's like watching a movie with friends, you know? But I think when you go to something, again, like Stanley Parable, where it's very convoluted and it's the same. You want to experience that for yourself firsthand, and watching someone else do it, and it's like, oh, take that choice, and you get frustrated at the game. You're like, I just don't want to play it now. That guy's kind of ruined it for me, you know.
It would be interesting to talk. Like, I know we're all kind of like-minded in that we know what we like. We know at what point we need to stop watching something and go out and play it if we want to play it. And we have the means to purchase games. You know, we have what's the word? Disposable income. Maybe not as much as we'd hope, but sometimes we have disposable income that we can throw at video games. But there are people out there. I remember when I was a kid, like, I had to rent Smash Brothers like 8 times before my mother was finally like, go buy the damn game, Ryan. Come on. You know, so there are people out there that I think, you know, have to rely on these Let's Plays to experience a game that they want to experience. And I wasn't trying to make an argument that Let's Play videos are bad. I think they're great. I love them. Mm-hmm. The best example was what James started off with how do I know this game's any good? I mean, reviews are one thing, but I'd like to see someone of like mind play it and see what they think. And this Thief game is a pretty big release, and I was sort of interested in it because I enjoyed the Deus Ex, that new game. It's, I don't think it's made by the same people, is it?
I believe it is Eidos, actually. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a really good point, is that I think that that's a really good way, and I don't think that hurts the industry. I don't think Let's Plays hurt the industry at all. But I think there, like Joel had said, there's these extremes that I'm sure result in a loss of a few sales, but not enough that developers need to start blocking people on YouTube.
And if developers start listening to the crowd, then, I mean, if you have the capability, depending on what, you know, your developing partners are, you know, to release a beta and let people play it, let people stream it, let, you know, the world at large comment on it, have thick skin, because it's the internet and you're going to get, you know, lambasted. Yeah. Even if you tell everybody it's a beta and it's broken, help us fix it, they're still going to say, oh, this sucks. You know, but if you can then take that data and use it to your advantage and create a better game, again, there's that delicate balance between, like, the potential negative PR you'll get from people not understanding, not seeing, not noticing that it's in beta, you know, or just dismissing it because of a bad experience from a bad streamer. Because that's something that I've experienced before too. Has been, you know, like, you go to watch the stream of a really good game. Like I said, I'm excited about WildStar. There are some WildStar streamers that I cannot stand, and it's just, you know, like, I'm a little sheltered probably in my casual MMO experience has been with AIE, and everybody is super nice and super patient and super fun and great personalities. But there are some people out there who are just like, I would not want to play a multiplayer game, you know, with you if my life depended on it. And that can kind of taint your experience of that game. And you might not, you know, be aware of it, but subconsciously it might affect, you know, like, well, that wasn't very fun, like, that was kind of stupid.
It kind of gives you maybe not an insight, but it kind of bends you towards thinking that that's what the community is going to be like. You think all these people are going to be nasty.
Well, for example, if you think about, like, you know, the kind of people you run into playing, well, for example, I don't know this firsthand, but I've heard that League of Legends can be a very tough crowd. You know, like, so that to me, it has kept me from trying League of Legends, whereas I've played Dota before and quite enjoyed it, you know, so, and I know that they're very similar games. So it's just that it's that community that's just like, I know I don't have the time to become very good at League of Legends, but I know that I can be moderately good and at least know my role in Dota. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm going, because the community there, while it has its hardcore people as well, seems to be a little bit more accepting. The one thing that we didn't touch on, though, is education. And if money isn't a factor, if it's a free-to-play game like Hearthstone, and people are thinking, like, oh, God, like, do I really want to invest time? Like, do I have the time to learn this new game? By watching people stream and watching tournaments, same thing with StarCraft. Like, by watching a streamer like Husky, who's not actually playing, but he's shoutcasting, you know, recorded games, you can really start to get a handle on how the game is played, how to not play the game, especially if someone who is educated and articulate is communicating to you, oh, you shouldn't do this first, you should do this second, and here's the patterns that are evolving here, and here's the counter for this card in Hearthstone. Like, all of those things can really help sales. I think that that would be, there'd be no negative to that side of people out there. I mean, you've got, you know, fans of your game championing the cause and teaching other people how to play, like, that you couldn't ask for a better you know, like, a better advertisement, right?
It's free PR.
And I think that's what's so great about the next gen consoles, including Twitch support. I've dabbled with it on the PS4, and it's literally, you click a button and you're live, and it's a really cool way to share your experience with with other people. I mean, when we were playing StarCraft last night, we were all pretty rusty, as we said at the top of the show. And in the chat room, there'd just be little tidbits that people would throw out about, you know, we'd ask, like, oh, you know, what do I need as part of this combo to beat, you know, Mass Mutilus? It's like, well, did you have stim packs? Like, well, no, I didn't. It's like, well, there you go. Try stim packs next time. You know, little examples like that. Like, what's Chrono Boost? Chrono Boost is pretty much the, you know, the major leg of the Protoss build order. Mm-hmm. It's just really interesting. And I think also streams give you the ability to experience a game in a way that you'll never be able to experience it. Like, I'm never going to be the best at, I don't know, like, I guess we'll go with, what's a skill-based game online? Like,
League of Legends.
League of Legends is a good one. I'm never going to be super great at League of Legends, so it's interesting to watch a stream, or even StarCraft, to watch those, some of those streams that they had at BlizzCon. Watching those is like, oh, so that's what it's like to play this, like, a god, just like super quick macro this, macro that, and mm-hmm. I'm never gonna be able to play like that because I don't have the time to devote to it. So it's really cool. And we had people in the stream that were saying, like, oh, this is really interesting, I'm finally experiencing StarCraft 2 like a noob. It's like, oh, thanks guys, thanks a lot.
we should call that stream Rusty StarCraft.
Yeah, maybe
whenever we maybe play StarCraft, we should just call it Rusty StarCraft because it's always going to be rusty.
Well, I think people who were out were just, you know, we were like, oh, we're sorry, we're not that great, but they were like, don't apologize, this is funny, like this, mm-hmm. you know, they were there for, you know, to watch bad StarCraft, rusty StarCraft, but also to hear our commentary on what was going on. Like, we were all on a Skype call, it was all for fun, just mm-hmm. I think that's the end goal of most of these streams, is to check out the game, but also to pair it with a personality. And Joel had said that, you know, he can't just, there's some streamers you just can't watch, and you wonder, like, not to put anyone down, but you wonder, like, you might want to rethink the way you're streaming this, because, you know, you're getting in the way of the content, or you're just not mm-hmm. entertaining enough or enthusiastic. I think enthusiasm is one of the biggest things you need to have when you're streaming a game, because then it sounds like, I'm going to push this, and this is where you have to go do the thing. You know, like, you gotta be there, right?
Quasi Chaos in the chat room brought up the point that the only negative to LPs is story-driven games, and I can see that being a negative to the industry. And he says basically they give you the whole story and you don't have to buy them, and I can see that being a negative to the industry. But, for example, I detested the gameplay in The Last of Us. I thought it was slow and boring and nothing special. But I love the story. Mm-hmm. And I was able to sit there and watch someone play through the game, and I could pause it or mute it when he was doing the gameplay, and during a cutscene, I could watch the story. And I do think that it does stop me from buying the game, but, I mean, the next, I'm just going to watch on YouTube, and to be fair. I don't think it's a negative, I just think it's another way of experiencing the movie.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, maybe to get around that, you know, developers will create like a let's play video for people. I remember back in the day, Sony did these promotional tours where they'd bring this giant transport trailer to like future mm-hmm. shops around Canada, and you mm-hmm. could go in, they handed me a DVD, and it had all the story cutscenes with gameplay in between to tell you the story of all the Jack and Daxter games.
That would be awesome. Like if say Naughty Dog sold mm-hmm. the story from Last of Us for, mm-hmm. say, third of the price, I'd buy it. No problem.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that gives you the ability to get, like, basically the director's cut from Naughty Dog, mm-hmm. and they see yeah. some money for it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they actually do it or whether it's worth the time, but especially when you have people out there creating their own director's cut for free, they kind of have to balance it out. But I know a few people that didn't enjoy the Last of Us gameplay and had the same opinion as you, James. They thought, well, I'm just going to YouTube the story. Or at least what's left of it, because I just can't do this anymore.
Well, especially if you can reduce it to a price point that is on par with, you know, renting a movie.
A movie, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, exactly. If you can get it down to under Netflix prices, you know, like under $7 or $8, then I would think like, all right, well, there's going to be, I mean, a lot of times there's, you know, in, I'm not sure how much gameplay there was in The Last of Us, but say there was, you know, 20 or 30 hours of gameplay. Mm-hmm. If that gets cut down into even like 2 to 3 hours of, you know, cutscene mm-hmm. content and storytelling, that's still longer than most movies.
Yeah.
You know, like you could really see some value. And if it's going to be a digital download, I mean, you don't have to worry about any, mm-hmm. you know, physical media like you do with consoles.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be an interesting, it'd be an interesting experiment to see if any developer would be brave enough to have a, you know, a story and experience that is both playable and watchable and released at the same time and just let the general public decide. Like, okay, if you're a gamer and you like this type of game, then play the game. And if mm-hmm. you're not a gamer, if you're, you know, a parent that's not into it, or you don't have time, or you're an MMO player and you don't like, you know, real-time strategy, or you don't like, you know, RPGs, then like solo ones, then you could just watch it. And you could experience it all. You could catch up with pop culture. Like, you're not going to be lost at your next, you know, party where all your gamer friends are talking about this game that you've never played. And it could really give people options. It'd be an interesting experiment to see.
I'm trying to remember. I think Mass Effect 3 had an option that basically turned off the combat.
Yeah, it did. Well, it at least allowed you to quickly get from one point to the next. Like, they had a story mode where combat was like, poke dead and you walk to the next section to start the story, and it was very story based. I know a lot of people gave BioWare shit for that, and they were like, you know, and when I say a lot of people, I mean the vocal mm-hmm. asshole like minority of the internet. It's like, calm down, guys, this is there for people who just want to experience the story. And Mass Effect is a very replayable game, not because the combat's amazing, although it is fun, it's because of the story and the choices. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for trimming that content all the way down just to experience the story again and try different choices. I mean, a great example, maybe even better than Last of Us, was Bioshock Infinite, where the mm-hmm. story was so great and then the combat was a first person bloodfest.
Yep.
You know, and I know that turned a lot of people off, like, you know, like it was very violent and it didn't really match, I felt didn't really match the tone they were going for with the story.
The word, and I've been reading about this recently, it's called ludo narrative dissonance.
Mm.
And basically what that means is it means that the game doesn't mesh with the gameplay. The story doesn't mesh with the gameplay. And I don't know if you played Gunpoint, but he talks about it in that. And it's Bioshock Infinite does it exactly. It just felt weird.
Well, there's a lot of examples out there. I mean, the new Tomb Raider reboot had an issue where...
I love that game.
It's so good. It's a minor issue where this isn't really a spoiler, but Lara like cries when she kills a deer so she can survive, and mm-hmm. then like 10 minutes later she's like taking an AK and shooting them dick to head, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
and I'm not kidding, like you can literally move from that point to that point in a very short amount of time, and
mm-hmm.
that is them trying to tell a really touching and engaging and true to life story, but also having to remember that this is a video game and you have to have gameplay mechanics, and part of those gameplay mechanics are finishing moves and mm-hmm. yeah,
the adrenaline.
I'm trying to think about the last game that I played that did that poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the Transformers games that I've played have done it very well, but I feel like there were some other games recently that just didn't go very well like that. But I think some of the ones that are jumping to mind are probably still under NDA, so I can't say that.
Well, I mean,
if it's the big MMO that you want to talk about, that's actually not under NDA anymore. So
no, it depends on which one you're talking about. So no,
okay, yeah, fair enough.
There's a couple.
There are. Sure. I think a lot of games that suffer from that issue are the ones that try to get away from cutscenes. I know cutscenes for some people, for some developers, it was like a faux pas. It's like, oh, you should never, you know, like Half-Life, there's no cutscenes. It all just happens. And you know, you the story always worked because the characters were just so engaging. But Diablo 3 is a good example of story kind of happening in the background. You can miss some of the story because mm-hmm. you're running around trying to sell stuff and you accidentally talk to somebody else and it overrides the speech. You know, like, that's where cutscenes come in handy. You know, you have the big messages, you know, in front of you without you being able to skip unless you hit escape.
Yeah. I thought about a really good example, actually. Mm-hmm. World of Warcraft. There's been several examples of, you know, Jocelyn and I leveling together and doing quests together. And as the quests got more robust with audio dialogue and different things that happened in front of you, they would all get instanced. And, like, she would be, you know, two-thirds of the way through a quest explanation, and I would be one-third, and we'd be trying to talk over Skype or Vent, and one of us would have to shush the other because the NPC was saying something important. And, like, it really, the gameplay was not at all meshing with the story. And it seemed like it would have been such a simple solution. Like, if you're on the quest together, just be on the quest together. You know, like, it seemed like you can go, we can all get into a group of five and go into a dungeon. And that works just fine. Why can't you do that for, you know, quest groups? Like, I just, stuff like that I find, especially when there's no cutscenes, because that becomes a real issue. Because if there's a cutscene, immediately you're no longer talking to any other people that are on whatever VoIP service you're using. You know, you kind of, your hands leave the keyboard and the mouse because you don't want to click and skip it. So everybody kind of sits there quiet and listens and watches. And I heard that stuff was pretty cool in SWTOR, though I've never...
Yeah, I was going to say, they handle that really well in...
yeah, I've never really played it, but I hear lots of people rave about that. But I feel like, and I know that you guys talked about this in the last episode of The Gamers Inn, but as an animator, as an artist...
I know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, well, just the assets that are available for gameplay are great for gameplay. The moment you try to do facial acting, lip sync, even some body acting on some, you know, game graphics, not all, because some of them are pretty good these days, but like the moment you start to do that, if you're not doing that exceptionally well, then just give me a cutscene, because you will tell a truer story, you will have more emotion, you will have more to communicate to the audience than you will with a low poly person nodding when they shouldn't nod and, you know, stepping when they shouldn't step. You're better off to just give that separation or give that cutscene in between things than to try to lay it all into your low poly stuff.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. And The Walking Dead is the worst for that. Like, The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us, Telltale needs... I think the reason they haven't published anything on next gen is because they don't want to get rid of that engine. And they know when they go to next gen, people are going to be scrutinizing them for just awful lip syncing tech. But so just to get back to Twitch, and then we'll wrap up here. I think the main reason why Twitch streaming is really cool, and the reason we're getting Gamers in Game Night back up and running, is that my favorite thing about video games is the way you feel when you're having fun and you're just the camaraderie and you're killing things and you're having a blast and you're forgetting about Monday morning coming up or whatever. And I think that's probably the best part about Twitch streaming, is that you get to experience someone else's joy from playing a game and share that moment with them. And that was sort of reserved to, you know, couch and living room experience with your friends back on, you know, the olden day consoles. But now you can kind of do it. You can experience, you know, an epic moment in a video game with someone who's playing in Tokyo or London, like we're doing right now. We're all over the country and the world talking about video games.
That's exactly how I felt when I was streaming Metal Gear Revengeance. Like, when I was running on the missiles, I was cheering because it was so awesome. And it felt so good to be... if I was sitting there playing that with my brother on the couch, we'd be high fiving and having so much fun. And that's exactly what Twitch gives you in that style.
Yeah. So that being said, if you want to give us virtual high fives and experience video games with Jocelyn and I and our many gaming friends, including James and Joel, we will be playing Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern until whenever we want to go to bed. No one's going to make us go to bed, even though it is a Thursday and we have to work in the morning. But tune in for that. We usually announce the game a couple days before. We try to come up with the game before while we're recording the episode. I don't know what we're playing next week, but the beauty of our listeners is that we want to listen to you. So tell us what game we should play. You listen to us. We're going to listen to you. It's a beautiful relationship. Email us, tweet us, Facebook us. So that brings us to the end of the show. I just wanted to give a quick plug to Slash Loot. If you're going to be attending Nerdtacular, you're going to want to make sure you have as many geeky t-shirts as you can get your hands on. And Slash Loot is the best place for all those t-shirts, including the Gamers In t-shirt. You can get one there in black, I think ash and white. There are StarCross t-shirts from the wonderful Joel Duggan.
There is?
There are two of them, are there not?
There's more than two. I think I've got four different designs.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Or two designs in four different colors.
Right. So that's good. There's also a Zombies Ate My Podcast t-shirt if you're into zombies. There's a lot of t-shirts featuring Scott's art. And we all know everybody who listens to the Gamers In is a fan of Scott Johnson. And also A-Move. Lots of A-Move stuff. StarCast. Angry Chicken. Come on, guys. We all know you listen to Angry Chicken. So check out slashloot.com and buy yourself a t-shirt. So I want to give a quick thanks to Joel and James for joining us. Joel, what do you got to plug for me today? Is there anything going on in Joel's life that the people need to know about?
Absolutely. This week, I launched my Patreon.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, if you go to patreon.com/Joel Duggan, you can check out my Star-Crossed comic page. For those of you who don't know, I've been drawing Star-Crossed for about 4 years. It's a web comic that I post weekly, and I'm adopting the value-for-value model. So I've got some goals outlined on the page. I've got three levels of support, $1, $3, and $5. But honestly, like, even if it's not in the in the budget, you know, to help out financially, just telling friends and spreading the word about Patreon is enough for me, because, you know, if it's not your favorite webcomic artist, it might be your favorite musician, your favorite vlogger, your favorite Twitch streamer. And these are people that are just doing creative things because they love to, possibly trying to make a little bit of money or even making a business out of it. And Patreon is making a real... I want to say a dream come true, but it's making an opportunity. It's breaking down the walls between readers and fans and listeners and fans and the people that are creating the content. So if you are into webcomics, then check out StarCrossed at StarCrossedOnline.com and then head on over to Patreon, which is patreon.com/Joel Duggan, and check out what I've got planned. And hopefully lend your support, because I would love to be able to try to have StarCrossed, you know, subsidize itself and become kind of its own entity. I'm always going to draw it for free. It's an ongoing thing, but it's one of those situations where the, you know, Kickstarter kind of started the ball rolling, and I feel like Patreon is just picking it up and running with it now. So it's a really interesting site.
Yeah, Patreon to me seems like more ongoing content, whereas Kickstarter is more project-based. They both have
their own. That's precisely the difference. Yeah, that's precisely the difference. And, I mean, at the base level at $1 a month, it's 25 cents a comic, you know? Yeah. So it's a pretty low bar.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Canadian, let's put it this way. If you go to buy a coffee at Tim Hortons, rather than buying that extra large, just get the small. You're going to get your two roll-up-the-rim chances either way. Take a hit for Joel Duggan. All right. Mm-hmm. Not a drug kind of hit. Jeez. Anyways, James, that's enough of that. James, speaking of drugs, how's it going?
It's going good. What's up?
Do you have anything to tell the fine listeners? Where can they find you?
They can find me at Yagavos on Twitter. And is it okay if I give a little plug or something real quick?
Oh, of course. Yeah, go ahead. That's why I was like, James,
oh, yeah, I know.
Give the people the plugs.
Me and Paul Swickard have been working on a little project.
Mm-hmm.
I've been recording secretly a show. We've had you on a show.
Right? I was going to say, he's hijacking the Gamers In. He's talking about a competitive product. Killers, no, I'm just joking. Yes,
we've been recording a show called The Thunderdome.
Oh, it is called The Thunderdome.
It's called The Thunderdome.
Oh.
And essentially, we go into Steam Greenlight and we make fun of everything.
That sounds like what I do when I open Steam, so now I can listen to it.
Exactly.
Cool.
And that's coming. We're still in the paid episodes right now. We're going to record two more, and then we're going to be releasing those. And it's a lot of fun. And we don't have a Twitter yet, but we have a website, which is a WordPress blog so far.
That's good.
But yeah, just keep an eye out for it. It'll be on iTunes soon. Really
cool. Well, when it launches, let me know, and we'll definitely give a plug, because the Gamers Inn takes care of its friends.
Yay.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us at amove.tv, along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and Amove Radio. And I need to update that, because we should put "and the Angry Chicken." I don't know why that's not there. Follow us on Twitter. We just copy and paste every week. This text is like years old. Follow us on Twitter. You can find Jocelyn at GIS Gamer, myself at R Murphy, Joel Duggan at Joel Duggan, James at Iagovos. It's probably the best way to put it.
However, anyway, no one's said it correctly in years. I don't care.
Oh, so you don't even know.
Lost the will to care about it anymore.
Oh, that's not good. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. We're also on Facebook and Google Plus if you so choose to like us and plus one us there. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Jocelyn Moffat. You should totally subscribe. Email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com, and we could read your content on the show. Write us a review on iTunes as well. We'll read those too. Before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Greg Moffat for creating our music. Find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan, who does our graphic work. You can find him and everything he does at, I'm gonna pimp another URL. You can find his podcast at thecitadelcafe.com, right?
Oh, thanks.
There you go. We got the whole trifecta in. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week. Bye, everybody.